Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, wherever you may be. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada, on, for me, Friday afternoon, February the 11th, 2022. And exactly 1 week ago today, I was speaking with Amy Purcell in Sydney, Australia, better known as Amy from Sydney. And her first interview discussion was wildly successful and continues to be wildly successful. And so she is back for a round two. How are you today, Amy?
I'm well, thanks, John. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Well, listen, that discussion we had last week, very well received. All over the place, people like it. I think you made an impact.
Oh, thank you. I was quite pleasantly surprised by a lot of the feedback that I received and the nice comments, the retweets. So I'd like to say thank you to everybody for all of that. And thank you to you for interviewing me too, John.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So, you know, we're back again exactly 1 week later. And, you know, I'm really impressed by your willingness to talk about this stuff so openly, so publicly, even under your real name. I mean, this is just, it's fantastic. But you and I would agree that many, if not most, people affected by this would much rather to stay underground, right?
That is something I have noticed too, John. A lot of people are afraid of the repercussions that they may experience from the American government, the IRS, and in some cases, even the governments of their resident countries. It is a bit of a worrying trend, though, because I feel as though the fewer people we've got speaking out, the fewer the chance of success. We need to engage as many people who would be willing to do this as possible. And you can do this anonymously, too.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, to do it anonymously. I mean, let me put the question to you this way. Do you think that as a general principle, the greater risk is in staying silent, not speaking out and hiding, or stepping up, speaking out and saying, this is out now wrong and this has to change? Where do you think the greater risk lies?
The greater risk definitely lies in being quiet, because if we don't speak up, the United States government will just assume that we are all okay with this and that the people speaking up are a minority. Therefore, they will have little incentive to change this because they will work on the assumption that the majority of citizens aboard are happy with the status quo.
Well, that sure makes sense to me. It apparently doesn't make sense to a lot of different people out there, but it may be partly that it is hard to unite people because other than a sense of being uncomfortable, a sense of cost, a sense of fear, panic, it's not often easy to articulate exactly what the problem is here that needs to be changed, right?
That's correct. And I find Twitter can even be challenging because you've got so few figures you're allowed to type. So there is that, but it is something that a lot of people feel passionate about that are quite quiet about. I've even had a couple of people approach me this week and say, good on you for speaking out. I've been afraid to do so. And while I can't tell them to do something that they're uncomfortable with, they can, I remind them, they can do this anonymously if they're that worried about it. But if we don't speak out, I just don't see this situation changing in a great hurry.
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, I've been kind of at this for a number of years, and there's definitely been progress. It's slow progress, but I think there'd be a lot more progress if people would be a lot more vocal, a lot more united, and a lot more clear on what the problem is that needs to be changed. And of course, my view is that what needs to be changed is citizenship taxation.
Yes.
Which is the original sin and cause every one of these other problems, right? In other words, you get rid of citizenship taxation, the problem, all groups are gone. And it's interesting to me that if you look at the various groups affected by this, I mean, there's built-in structural conflicts, you know, essentially, because, you know, you've got the people who are filing taxes and are concerned about the citizenship taxation. You've got other people who are not filing taxes, but are concerned about banking access, right? And you don't care specifically about that. So this is a big problem.
I feel like it could get worse too. Currently, I'm okay because I've got access to banking services at least. A lot of citizens abroad do not have that. What is to say that the Australian banks won't just wake up tomorrow and say, you know what, we can't deal with FATCA anymore. We're purging our books of all US citizen clients. They could do that. And then what happens to me? How do I pay my bills? How do I receive my pay from my employer? Just because you're okay for the moment.
Collateral damage, sort of
collateral damage.
Roadkill in pursuit of a higher purpose.
Okay, that's descriptive, but I'll go with it.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's one thing to talk about, you know, living under these restrictions in the abstract. But, you know, the reality of it is quite different. In a world where you can't survive without access to financial institutions, credit cards, you know, all that sort of stuff, right? Well, you know, we talk about the importance of speaking out, and not only, you know, so you started on Twitter, and now we're on a very successful podcast, and we do three or four of these more, and I predict you'll be a household name, Amy. But you know, there is an election coming, right? And there's one of the constant themes on Twitter is, get out and vote, get out and vote, sign up to vote. What are your thoughts on all this?
I am uncomfortable with the idea of voting from abroad because I need to know who the candidates are that would support citizens abroad. We've even had a couple come right out and say, no, sorry, we don't support citizens abroad. We've also had a couple who just basically been silent with the minority, such as David Anderson and also the other gentleman that I'm hoping to meet tomorrow my time. His name's just slipped my mind for a second there. I have to refresh my mind. Sharif Grassis. I'm going to try and speak to him, and he's offered to at least listen. So we've got a few people who are willing to listen, but again, we get there because we're willing to talk to people and they're willing to talk to us. So we need to know who they are and where they stand. And that, I think, is where the votes will flow once citizens abroad do decide to start voting. We're not, I think, as a group, necessarily. I don't really want to speak on behalf of everybody because that's not really a fair thing for me to do. But I'm getting the feeling the majority of citizens abroad are not happy to vote for people who are not going to take us seriously. And that, I feel, is the holdup to getting us to vote.
I think that there's very little doubt about that. And I think that any candidates and or political parties who came out with a very, very clear statement that this citizenship taxation is wrong and that FATCA is wrong and that they would do everything possible to get this stuff reversed, I think regardless of political party, they would attract a lot of votes. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Why should you vote for somebody who hurts you?
Well, you know, that would be my view of the situation. But yet, you know, I was listening to something yesterday suggesting that 1.2 million Americans abroad voted in the 2020 presidential election. I don't know if that's accurate or if it's not accurate. And, you know, the Democrats are, or at least the Democrats abroad, or the Democratic Party makes the claim that Americans abroad put the Democrats over the top in, I guess it was Arizona and Georgia. But at the same time, the Democratic Party seems to have zero interest in changing any of the policies that hurt Americans abroad.
That is my observation too, John. I feel like we really need to push very hard with the Democrats, firstly, because they are currently in power at the moment, so it'll be their decision. Secondly, it was actually a Democratic policy to bring in FATCA. So again, they have that incentive to defend that policy. Yet here we are with facing the prospect of voting for these same people who have hurt us. As if it is true that it was Citizens Abroad who got Georgia and Arizona, I think it was you said, got them over the line.
That's actually then, what they say. Yeah, if it is true.
If it is true, then those states probably have a duty to step up here and reach out to us and say, hey, you've helped us. What can we do to help you?
Mm-hmm. Well, one would think that that would be the case, wouldn't you? But it does not seem to be the case at all. In fact, you know, over the last year or so, there have been some astounding things, you know, coming from senior Democrats, you know, in the Senate. We have, for example, Senator Whitehouse's infamous fat cat joke in the Senate finance hearings last year. I mean, it was unbelievable. We have Elizabeth Warren openly proclaiming that citizenship taxation is the reason why her wealth tax would work. You know, part of the impact of that being literally, you know, the flow through being to impose wealth taxes on, in some cases, as the legislation was written, the non-resident alien spouses of U.S. citizens in other countries.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is the problem. The U.S. tax code is so complicated that I'm not saying that this is deliberate, and I don't think it is deliberate, but the problem is that the problem is citizenship taxation, right? That it flows through, you know. In
That's some- right. If you're going to have something like citizenship taxation, you need to cover all bases, such as what happens if a U.S. citizen marries a non-U.S. citizen in a non-U.S. country. You need to cover all of those things, which does make it more and more complicated, more difficult to police, and probably more expensive. I've often wondered how much it costs the IRS to run this, and I don't think they're probably getting back what they spend, but the majority of the funds that they bring in through citizen taxation, based on what I've heard, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it actually stems from fines rather than taxes. So I am of the opinion that the easiest thing for both Citizens Abroad and the United States government would be to go to a resident-based system. The majority of the world's doing that, and it seems to work. For one thing, if I did, in the unlikely event that I became like some kind of a complicated, sophisticated investor and had investments in the United States or earned US income in France or wherever, goodness knows what they think is going to happen, I'm quite sure the Australian Tax Office could arrange for me to declare that income to them and then pass on whatever relevant payment is required to the IRS. There would be means to achieve, you know, fair tax payment around the world so that no country gets left out without the need to do something so drastic as FATCA.
Well, FATCA is, of course, the enforcement tool. You mean as drastic as citizenship taxation?
Yes. Yeah, it's too drastic. Citizenship taxation is just too drastic. No one needs it.
Well, I think you make a really, really good point. You know, for years and years, as much as Americans abroad are victims of this taxation stuff, the single biggest victim, in my opinion, is actually the IRS. Because can you imagine, you know, having to try to administer this sort of tax system around the world?
It's not a job I'd put my hand up for, John.
Well, I suspect that they have a lot of trouble finding people who are actually competent to do the job. Because let's look at it this way, right? So we have the U.S. tax code overlaying over the tax code of every country in the world, right? You know, let's mm-hmm. talk Canada and Australia, because these are two countries who we know. So in other words, the IRS would have to have not only experts in international tax, but they'd really need experts in Canadian tax, Australian tax,
Every country.
French tax.
How can they possibly expect to achieve something so complicated? They should not
there's an answer to it, okay? The answer is because they download it to the private tax compliance industry, right?
Okay.
So you're in Australia and, you know, you're worried about this and you walk into the office of, you know, XYZ accounting firm, you know, what have you. And the moment you're ushered into the office, you need to understand, okay, that you're sitting in front of somebody whose job it is to enforce U.S. citizenship taxation in your country, right?
Correct. And it's also their responsibility to have the knowledge necessary to protect you from fines you weren't aware of by the potential to accidentally, you know, make a mistake somewhere that messes things up, or to break a law that you don't know about. They have to stay on top of both, in my case, Australian law, Australian tax, as well as the US version.
Well, that's right, and
that's a lot of work.
You know, I don't think you were affected by this, but I don't know, say 2 years ago, the IRS unleashed a tsunami of $10,000 penalties.
What for?
For late filing of a form where people thought they were filing. It was unbelievable. All around the world, you know, people were getting mail where they were getting penalties from the IRS. Hello, today is your lucky day. You've been assessed a penalty under, say, 6048 of the Internal Revenue Code, and it is $10,000. Yes.
I'm guessing the majority of these people were actually not billionaires who could afford it.
Of course they were not. First of all, the majority of people don't have that kind of money. But you know, the problem with it is, I mean, leaving aside the outrageousness of the penalties, is the people who were penalized were the people who tried the very, very hardest in the world to comply with U.S. tax laws, notwithstanding they didn't even live in the United States.
That's right. The actual tax cheats probably don't even file. I wonder if that's crossed anybody's mind somewhere up in the top of Congress.
Who knows? Well, I don't think they think about this at all. And I think that's why, you know, if Americans abroad want to do anything about this, I mean, I think they've got to speak up and actually do something about it.
I agree. And as we've said, it is actually possible to do this anonymously if you are in any way worried. And there are lots and lots of people on Twitter who are anonymous. They've got some very creative Twitter handles. I love it. And they're very outspoken. They say what they think. And they don't seem to feel too worried about having their Twitter tracked because they're actually doing this, and we need more people doing that. We also need the people who are willing to do so to come away from the veil and write a letter to Congress or write a letter to the IRS, write a letter to somebody. But obviously to do that, you've got to use your real name, your real address, so they can write back to you. And I think that's also something important to do as well, because we've got to get through not just the social media channels, but the more established channels. So we're going to need people to really open up, say their piece, and express their anger, their displeasure, their fear, whatever it is they're feeling about this, they're going to have to say, or else this will never change. And they themselves will continue to suffer under it.
Well, I think that is true, but I think it's true to add to that, and this is something that I believe you are doing this week, that there has to be outreach to media people and or government people in the countries where they live. And, you know, I think you know what I'm talking about. This week, there was a media interview with Secretary of State Blinken in Australia, and I'm kind of impressed. You know, and what she did to kind of get the issue front and center. Do you want to describe that?
Well, myself and a few others caught wind of Lee Sales, who is a very well-established journalist here in Australia. She did an interview with the Secretary of State, and we tweeted at her and responded to her tweet asking about FATCA, citizen-based taxation, and really just trying to get out there in front of her. Unfortunately, I've since found out that by the time she tweeted that, she'd already filmed it. I think she must have just filmed it and then tweeted. She's a busy woman, I understand that. But all the same, even if she didn't get the chance to ask him these questions about citizen taxation, getting the tweets to somebody like her could still prove valuable in the long run, because she might get another bite at this another time. Although she's actually unfortunately resigned from her current post in that job, she's staying with the network and she will get something else similar. So that she's still worth speaking to. You also don't know who's reading her tweets and what they could do with this, which means you don't know who's reading the comments. So it is worth getting out there and doing this. I also tried to comment on a few local news sources to tell people about this. Unfortunately, I didn't get that much of a response, but hey, you never know. It's worth it.
Well, I would not confuse not getting an immediate response with not getting a response or not making an impact.
Exactly. Yeah. You just don't know.
People see the same thing. You know, they may blow it off the first time, the second time, but the third or the fourth time, you know, they may wonder, hey, maybe these aren't a bunch of crazies.
That's right. That is one thing we are fighting against. We look like a bunch of lunatics because what we're dealing with is so crazy that a lot of people don't believe that the United States of America would have a government that would impose this. It is too draconian for the most democratic country in the world to ever impose, but they have imposed it. Nevertheless, people don't believe it, so we get laughed at, we get blown off, but we need, it just goes back to that same old thing. We need to be getting out there. We need to be getting seen because the United States government should answer for this and they should retract it. And that's just not going to happen unless we start getting some coverage here.
Well, the United States eventually will answer for this, either because they make the decision to answer for it or their loss of moral authority in the world will mean they've answered for it.
Yes.
It's interesting to me that I think part of the problem is that people inside the United States don't even believe this is going on.
No, they don't. I had to tell my own family about it and they were shocked. They didn't know.
But they believed it because it came from you, right?
Yes.
If it hadn't come from you and they read it in some newspaper, do you think they would have believed it?
Maybe not. Depends on the news source and how much they trust it, I suppose. But it does sound too spacey. Who would believe it? I didn't believe it when I was first told, and I'm impacted.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
The other day, I did not believe it. How do I expect a homelander who lives under this government 24/7 to believe it when I don't believe it myself?
Well, there is definitely a sense of, you know, real sort of presumptive righteousness, you know, from America looking out that not only is everything America does, it's got to be right, but America could never do anything unjust, right?
Right. And that's why I was so surprised.
A little bit of that interesting letter on Twitter from that U.S. immigration lawyer this week. What are your thoughts on that?
Just like so many, she did not know what she was dealing with. She thought she knew and she didn't. I actually wrote her an email. And in that email, I said, look, I understand that you've got concerns about citizens abroad and taxation in renouncing. And you seem to think that people are renouncing for tax benefits, with emphasis on the word benefits.
Oh, that was just a shocking, shocking.
Yeah. I said to her, these are not benefits. I said, a lot of these people are trying to avoid an unjust tax system. If that's not the same thing as getting a benefit. And I've pointed out to her.
You know that the rules, the tax rules as applied to Americans abroad actually result in a different tax system altogether. Americans abroad are taxed more punitively in a similar situation than a resident American. Do you know that?
Yes, I've been told. I don't think that's fair either, but it just goes to show this inherent distrust of Americans abroad.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing thing when, you know, at least on balance, I think Americans abroad are definitely a great untapped resource for the United States.
And so I think that's why we said.
Well,
that's why we.
You know, let's, and this is great. Why don't we sort of call it for today? We've got plenty to pick up on going forward, but let's end with, you know, what is your advice? What is your message for all these Americans abroad who feel they're being unjustly treated by the United States of America, as Margaret Thatcher once said, that great citadel of freedom and justice?
Well, I would say I agree. We are being treated very unjustly, but we need to do something about it. And I do acknowledge we're dealing with limited resources here. We're not the billionaires we're accused of being, which means we can't summon the funds to take this on through probably the fastest channels. But we do need to speak up. We can use Twitter. We can use Facebook, we can write letters, we can make phone calls, we can have meetings. Sooner or later, something's got to crack. But you can do this anonymously if you are that worried about it. And there are probably people who have just cause for feeling that way. But you can also write letters using your real name, which gives it a real strong sense of seriousness. But keep going, because we have to, because nothing's going to change unless we do. There's apparently 9 million, well, I've heard estimates between 6 and 9 million citizens abroad. If we could get even 1 million of those talking back to the United States government about this, that's a pretty big force right there.
Well, one way of talking back would be the million who voted. Maybe they don't vote anymore until there's some change. What do you think about that?
Also a good idea. As I said, I don't feel comfortable voting for people who definitely don't have my best interests at heart.
Well,
I want to see what they're going to do first.
It sounds so logical and rational. I don't know why that point seems to be so difficult for many people to understand. I mean, why would so many people want to vote for somebody who's clearly stated they want to hurt them?
I don't know, but the only thing I can think of is these are inherently good people who are just trying to do their democratic duty of voting. They're the same people who are filing taxes, even though it's an unjust system. But people need to see we're not being treated justly. We're not being treated fairly. We need to show the United States government that we're not happy with that, that we're not going to put up with it, and that they can't expect us to just blindly vote for them and be devoted to them when they do nothing but hurt us.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And on that note,
that was a blunt thing I said, but it's how I feel.
Well, I think you're feeling absolutely right. Okay. I mean, your thoughts and your feelings are perfectly aligned, in my opinion, anyway. Well, this has been another great discussion. Thank you so much for it. And are you willing to do another one?
That would be a fun thing to do, yes.
Well, we will pick it up again very, very soon.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.